Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 416 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
And this is Nick.
And this is a Secret War Saturday episode. We're going to be talking about the books that tie in to Secret Wars 2, number 4, the Love issue. The issue that was all about the Beyonder exploring what it means to fall in love. But one thing I did find interesting is that the first book we're going to talk about, Avengers 261, it almost seems like it tied into issue 3 more than it tied into issue 4. It seems like Avengers 260 and 261 both tied into 3.
Well, that's probably because of the release order based on monthly releases. Yeah. This one just came out then.
Yeah, I'm 100% thinking that that's exactly what it was. You're right, Nick. So let me give the creative team really quickly for the first book we're going to talk about, which is the Avengers book. It's 261. It's written by Roger Stern. We've got pencils by the legendary John Buscema, inks by Tom Palmer, colors by Max Scheel, and letters by Jim Novak. So I want to talk about the art first. When I say legendary, there are people who think that John Buscema is like the greatest comic book artist of all time. And there is an argument to be made for that. His sense of storytelling is absolutely fantastic. I don't know that there are too many other artists who are better at conveying emotion in facial expression and posture better than him. Things as simple as a little quirk of the mouth. He's a master storyteller. And when I think of the Avengers of this time period, this is the art that I picture. Especially Hercules. I love the way that he draws Hercules. I don't know that there's anybody better at drawing Hercules than John Buscema. So, yeah, he's an incredible artist. Unfortunately, he passed away. His brother Sal, I'm also a big fan of Sal Buscema. He's most known for his lengthy run on Hulk, but also Rom Space Knight. So you can see why I'm a big fan of his, because I love myself some Rom. So, this is really classic Avengers stuff. And I think that if you are a fan of the Avengers and you go back and read this time period from, say, issue 230-ish up to around 290s, 300, you'll get a great feel for who the Avengers were in the Bronze Age. It has a certain feel, right? It has that classic Marvel, Earth's Mightiest Heroes kind of feel, much more so than today's Avengers, where the lineup changes from issue to issue. During these times, you'd have roster changes, but there'd be long stretches where it was the same characters over and over, and so you'd have longer plot threads that would have to do with the relationships between Avengers teammates and, them getting along or not getting along.
They did that recently in the Avengers. The team, once they restarted their last number one before Legacy, with Sam Wilson as Captain America on the team, they carried that all the way through Secret Empire, which is 2 good years of that same team not changing at all. Which was one of the reasons I like that book, because when I was reading it 5 years ago or six years ago, it was every issue you'd see 20 Marvel characters every issue, and you're what? Yep. And that's kind of what the last storyline kind of became a little bit. They froze half the Avengers, so it wasn't that way, but
No Surrender, is that the one?
No Surrender.
I still want to read that. I've heard it's really good.
It's fun.
Before I get into the quick synopsis of the issue, Nick, what did you think of the art here?
I didn't really, 80s art looks like 80s art to me. I'm noticing what you're talking about as far as even posture on the first page.
Yeah.
Where the one scroll is definitely has an empire general posture, and that's very
And cool that. Fire Lord standing in the background with his arms crossed because he's standoffish and a douchebag.
Hercules, just being Hercules.
to me, the fact that you don't notice anything in particular about his art
is a good thing.
Yeah, that goes to show just what a master he is, that it's seamlessly integrated into the story.
But let me say one thing about the last issue, since I wasn't on the podcast for that one.
The love issue? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. This is mainly a generalization based on that, the way the story's been going. I don't know if it's better than Secret Wars, but I'm enjoying Secret Wars 2 a lot more because of its sheer ridiculousness. Like, this should be the next Avengers mega event. Not Secret Wars. Secret Wars 2.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. It's like, you read Marvel Superhero Secret Wars, you know, the original 12-issue series, because you want to learn about the Marvel Universe, learn about the characters, and see some, like, classic Marvel storytelling, right? Classic Marvel comics of the 80s, and it does all those things really great, and in that way it's enjoyable and you can learn a lot. But if you're talking about like pure entertainment value and, like you said, ridiculousness, then yeah, it's no contest Secret Wars 2, just because you find yourself laughing at just the sheer, like, ludicrousness of what's going on.
So it's
like,
more fun, I would say, yeah, personally, because exactly. The other ones are more traditional.
Exactly.
Where it's like, oh, we're teamed together, we're fighting a little bit, we have to defeat the bad guys. This one is very not what I was expecting at all, even when you said it was not liked very well and was crazy.
Dude, I told you it was nuts.
You were right.
Yep. I just, like I said, whenever I think about Secret Wars 2, I always think about that scene with him literally melting away his belly fat. And I just think how ridiculous is this.
Not only should this be the next Avengers movie, the Beyonder is so powerful that he could turn time back to the 80s just because at the beginning of the movie. And then they could still use the time period and keep all the suits, even the shoulder suit. Looks like it's going to swallow his face.
Exactly. They could use the dialogue of oh, you're looking mod. They could give him the Michael Jackson hairdo. Yeah, 100%. If I run into Kevin Smith at Comic-Con this next, or actually, as you're listening to this, I'm at Comic-Con, so if I run into him, I might go to his panel on Saturday night. I don't know. It's still up in the air. But yeah, I definitely would love to ask him, have you ever read Secret Wars 2? I really would love to know the answer to that question.
Man. And he'd go on for a 2-hour rant about it, and it'd be the best thing ever.
Way back when, it's been so long since I read it. I'd be like, I almost think I should go in there with a set, not all the crossovers or whatever, just one issues 1 through 8 or 1 through 9, and just be like, here you go, here's the research for your next film project. This must happen.
Kevin Smith would be the guy to do it.
He would, definitely. All right, well, let's get into the issue itself. Between 260 that we talked about previously and this issue, 261, Avengers Annual 14 came out. And the reason I mention that, it's mentioned in the story, it's because there was a event that happened in that annual, and it basically, one enemy of the Skrulls set off this, what does he call it, a hyperwave bombardment from the Imperial Power asteroid. And what that did was, it removed the ability for the Skrulls to change shape. That was always one of the like main powers of the Skrulls. The reason that they were able to become such a powerful race throughout the galaxy is because of subterfuge, right? Like, they could alter their physical appearance to look, you know, human or look like other races, whatever. But because
isn't that only Super Skrulls, or the update used to be only Super Skrulls?
It's all Skrulls.
Hmm. Okay, that's scary.
The Super Skrull was able to...
Fantastic Four powers, right?
Fantastic Four powers, yeah. But the rest of the Skrulls, they were always able to mimic, you know, they were just shape changers. But that being said, they think that other shapes that they have to assume for various are not aesthetically pleasing. If you remember, they mentioned that last...
Yeah.
When they look like a Ben. Oh, we get to discard these disgusting disguises or whatever and look more like our beautiful they kind of have that Thanos scrotum chin going
on. No, yeah. When the first Avengers movie came out, the post-credit sequence is Thanos. Everyone knows this except for you, just looking at the camera. And like, I thought it was a Skrull at first because I didn't know who Thanos was. And I was like, oh, they're going to do Skrulls next. And people were like, no, that's someone else.
Well, yeah, I don't think they can actually do Skrulls because...
No, they're doing them.
Well, because I thought
Fox owned them. I thought Fox owned them too, but they must have made another trade because they also... Fox should have owned another character they did too. But they're doing Captain Marvel villain is Skrulls. I think Ben Mendelsohn's like the head Skrull.
Nice. That's a good choice too for a Skrull.
And it's set in the 90s, so it could have giant ramifications for Avengers 4 if some of them were Skrulls all along or something. Like if Nick Fury was always a Skrull or if Coulson was always... Because Coulson and Nick Fury are in it, so they could have always been Skrulls or something.
Yeah, that was that Secret Invasion storyline they did a few years ago where we found out, you know, a lot of these people that had been trusted all along turned out to be Skrulls.
And that's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see that movie eventually if Captain Marvel is not a small portion of that.
But anyway, in this issue, we learn that, the Skrulls can no longer change shape. And what that means is any Skrull who doesn't look like a beautiful Skrull, you know, they're stuck in whatever shape that they were in at the time this hyperwave bombardment went off, because apparently it was galaxy-wide. So they're pretty upset about it.
But all the Skrulls here are in their original form, as far as we know, right? Yeah. None of them are an Avenger.
Exactly.
Okay.
And he's saying, it's true. I'm trying to change it. I can't. He said, what does it matter? We still have our true faces, and we're heroes of the Armada that wrested the Starship Sanctuary 2 from Nebula's grasp and added it to the Imperial arsenal. And Star Fox is like, well, you're only half right about that. Sanctuary 2 is not going to be part of anyone's arsenal. And he basically self-destructs it by having it collapse upon itself by destroying the gravity stabilizers. So a couple of the Skrulls are pretty mad. They're like, he destroyed it. We can't let that go unpunished. And the general's like, Star Fox is Thanos' brother. So he had the blood right to do what he wished with it. Now, as for you Avengers, you'll come with me. And he's whispering to Captain America, the general, as he leads him away, saying, if you stay here much longer, I may have a mutiny. It's really time for you to go with all haste. And Fire Lord's like, you'd like that, wouldn't you, Zadro? With the Avengers all in Star Fox's ship, you could train all your artillery upon them. You think we trust a Skull? And Wasp is like, hey, jackass, shut up. Zadro's earned the Avengers' trust, which is more than we can say for you. Captain Marvel, don't you love that pose of Captain Marvel? Hands on the hips, leaning forward, the sass position.
Nuh-uh.
Exactly. No, you didn't. Wasp is right. Since you tagged along with the Avengers, the general sent out a rescue party that found your ass lying unconscious on the moon. He's like, Zadro did that? Yeah, that's right. How do you think you got back here? And then Fire Lord's all upset. He's like, oh, man, I'm indebted to a Skrull. Astounding. And Hercules is like, come back to Earth with us. We'll get our drink on, talk about these glorious adventures. So the general does bid the Avengers farewell. He hopes when they next meet, they'll still be allies. Because, again, the Skrulls traditionally have been enemies of humanity and enemies of the Avengers and the Fantastic Four and just Earth in general. And as the Avengers head off to get into Star Fox's ship, General Zadro's even thinking, in the dark days ahead, I may have need of allies. So, interesting. I don't know if he's just talking about the Skrulls in general because they've lost, you know, their homeworld was devoured by Galactus and now they can't even change shape. Or is he just thinking of himself because he did ally himself with the Avengers? And so he's going to have to answer for that at some point. Just not really sure. So they all pile into Star Fox's ship. They fly back to Earth. On the way, Star Fox declares that he's leaving the Avengers. He gives his reason as wanderlust, but they're not buying it. And sure enough, he comes clean. He's like, yes, it's because I want to go look for Nebula, because she told me that she's Thanos' goddaughter, or granddaughter, rather, which would make her Star Fox's niece. So she wants to find out if that's true, or he wants to find out if that's true, rather. And Fire Lord decides he's going to tag along, and Star Fox is like, very well, if you must. And the reason Fire Lord...
What the hell is up with their species if they're all from Titan? And one's green, Thanos is a big purple monster, and I've always wondered that, and even the movies make you question. It's like, why is Thanos a big purple monster and everyone else on Titan kind of looks normal?
Yeah, so most of them do look normal. They look like humans. But they do have, every once in a while, they have, I'm not sure if they're called Deviants. I mean, Marvel does have a race called the Deviants, but yeah, every once in a while, somebody's born who looks like way different. And that's part of the reason that Thanos is the way that he is.
Because okay.
You know, like he was teased as a kid and, you know, he was like much more powerful, you know, as far as like strength wise, he was stronger than the average Titan. And yeah, it caused issues when he was growing up. But yeah, he technically is Star Fox's brother. So, but yeah.
That's so weird. I guess that's kind of like DC, I suppose.
Yeah. Star Fox hasn't been in any of the Marvel movies yet, right?
No. And I don't. I was just thinking before we did this podcast, when I was reading the issue, like, how cool would it be if without any announcement, like, Matthew McConaughey or someone flies into Star Fox and saves them all in Avengers 4.
That is perfect. I was trying to think. It's got to be somebody.
Isn't that a good one?
That's a great one. It's got to be somebody with a lot of charisma, right? Because part of Star Fox's powers, he has that charm power where he, like, stimulates the pleasure centers of people's brains and he can get them to go along and, you know, do what he wants. I don't want to rob this bank. I feel too good. La la la.
I think you do want to rob that bank.
Yeah, man. I think Matthew McConaughey would be perfect. Yeah, 100%. That's a great pick.
Marvel, are you listening?
Are you listening, Marvel? Hurry up and get Kevin Smith on board for Secret Wars 2 and also Matthew McConaughey. Wasn't he in a superhero movie already?
No, actually, Matthew McConaughey. I hope film fans don't attack me for not saying this earlier, but he said he doesn't want it. He's been offered Marvel parts that he turned down. I think he was even offered Star-Lord's dad, I think.
Oh.
I might be wrong on that, but he's definitely said, I don't want to do superhero movies. That genre is stupid, and he does other stupid movies anyway in other genres. So.
All right, do we have a backup for Star Fox? I'm trying to think of somebody else that has a lot of... You know who would be really funny as Star Fox? He's way too old. It wouldn't work. But Al Pacino.
Ooh.
Angry Star Fox.
I was like, if we went younger and made him goofy almost and give James Franco a second chance in a Marvel character.
Nah, I'm not a James Franco.
He's got like the hair up and stuff and he's like, hey guys.
No. I would be more inclined to go with like Zac Efron. Mel
Gibson. Oh, Zac Efron? Yeah, Zac Efron. Totally. More than, yeah.
All right, so anyway, Fire Lord wants to tag along, and the reason for that, of course, is because Nebula destroyed his homeworld of Xandar, so he must go with Star Fox. So the Avengers pile in their Quinjet and leave while Star Fox and Fire Lord stay behind to search for Nebula. They get back to Earth. Captain Marvel swings by to see her mom and dad. And once the rest of the Avengers get back to the mansion, Jarvis hurries up to them, and he's nervous. You can even see he's wiping the sweat off his forehead with his kerchief there, and he tells them about the visit from the Beyonder and how he inadvertently let it slip where the Beyonder could find them. And Captain America's like, he showed up all right with giant shoulder pads that looked like they were going to eat his head. And really... it's got to be our highest priority tracking him down because he literally could destroy the whole galaxy with just a wave of his hand. But before they can get to that, they're served with a notice from Jarvis that they're no longer allowed to have their Quinjets in the middle of Manhattan. So
is this a common theme in the Avengers comic? Even before Civil War, the government's always like, look, we don't trust you guys.
It wasn't for a long time.
But like in this issue and then a few between this and Civil War, it became a thing where the government's like, you guys need some oversight, buddies.
It happened right around the same time that Marvel really did a full court press on the whole mutant persecution thing. Early to mid 80s is where they really kind of like universe wide started talking about how people did not trust mutants. And that was an overwhelming sentiment. To the point where they, you know, wanted them killed or locked up or whatever. But even a little bit of that animosity toward mutant heroes kind of trickled over to more established heroes. And there really was
a
strained relationship for a long time between the Avengers and the government. Because before this, it was really, that's the Avengers. They can do whatever they want, you know?
The Avengers card. I'm taking over this airplane. Exactly. Just like a few issues ago.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So Wasp and Captain America head to Washington, D.C., and they're kind of making their argument why they need to keep the Quinjets like right there in Manhattan, because, you know, sometimes they find out about disasters or situations that they need to get to as quickly as possible, so they need their jets right there. And he's like, well, maybe you should move your base of operations to a safer location. And then Captain America's like, we don't even have time for this, man. At least grant us an extension on that 30-day limit, man. Right now, the world faces a menace of unspeakable power who can strike anywhere, anytime, man.
I thought it was really weird that he said man.
Yeah.
And I was thought, and I was like, what? Who's writing Cap?
Get us an extension on that 30-day limit, man. And sure enough, hippie. The Beyonder is listening, because he pops up right on top of the guy's desk. And the Washington bureaucrat's like, egad! Whoever said, I've never heard somebody use the word egad ever in my whole life.
I thought it was always egaz. I don't know why.
Yeah, so anyway, Beyonder's there. He still has the giant shoulder pads. And he says, I believe Captain America's referring to me. And they fight. They do manage to subdue the Beyonder to his surprise. I mean, look on his face. He's so shocked that the Wasp, because he runs. He's like, I'm out of here. You know, he like showed up. And it's like he's playing this cat and mouse game kind of, right? Like he shows up like, ha ha ha, you can't catch me. I'm the gingerbread man. And he runs off, and the Wasp is in fact able to catch up and sting him a few times. He's like, what? She caught me? She's very good at this. And then Captain America gives him the full-on shield treatment, knocks him on his butt. And Beyonder's like, you got me on the ground in just minutes? This will never do. You stopped me much too easily. I'll have to try again. Blinks out of existence. And you look on Cap's face there. He's like, oh, man, this is not good. If a second secret war erupts on Earth, we might not survive it. So 24 hours later, we see that Black Knight and Hercules have gone to Project Pegasus. They have a lot of scientific equipment there. And what they noticed was that when he showed up at the mansion to talk to Jarvis, their sensors there detected a vast store of internal energy and high levels of cosmic radiation. So they give him the examples of that. And the scientist is like, oh, yeah, I could, you know, we found identical readings to this at a Denver observatory a few weeks ago, which obviously is when the Beyonder first showed up. He went to Denver, talked to Molecule Man and Volcana. And so they're like, yeah, give me a day and I can triangulate our systems to be able to find this energy wherever it is on Earth. And the Beyonder pops up. What a marvelous collection of devices. How do they work? Mind if I flip some switches? So again, he clearly is keeping tabs on the Avengers and what they're doing. So Hercules immediately grabs him. It's like, nobody can break my grip. You know, what are you doing, Hercules? You never like jinx yourself like that. And sure enough, the Beyonder does break the grip, along with blowing out half the mountain that Project Pegasus is on. Then the Beyonder fights Black Knight by summoning a bunch of hands wielding swords from the ground. And then sword fights him one-on-one. And the Beyonder's like, I need to experience this, what this sword fighting is all about, apparently including being impaled. So he literally jumps onto the ebony blade of the Black Knight. And he's like, no, you idiot, don't. And Beyonder's like, that was clumsy of me. I knew that sharpened blades can pierce flesh and cause pain I've never experienced before. I need to go think about this. And he disappears. And finally, Hercules manages to fight to climb back up from the crater back to where the Black Knight is. And they're like, where'd he go? I don't know. He just disappeared. So they go back to Avengers Mansion. Black Knight and Hercules are trading information and stories with Captain America and Wasp. Captain Marvel has returned. And they're like, well, the good thing is Project Pegasus does believe they can track him down. It's just going to take about a day. And Captain Marvel's like, yeah, we track him down. Then how do we deal with him? Like, you know, what are we going to do? And Hercules is like, I know what I would do if I found the Beyonder. And the Beyonder immediately pops up in front of him and said, oh, what would you do? Wham! He punches him up through, like, what, 1, 2, 3, 4 stories of the mansion. And sure enough, the what the authorities were worried about coming to pass does happen, right? We got some fuel lines for the Quinjets that were ruptured. We got a spark from some electrical wires that were damaged. And we see a fwa-ba-boom! But, of course, all the Avengers rooms are equipped with automatic extinguishers. So puts out the fire pretty quickly as Captain Marvel has turned to light and she's searching. And so then Captain America manages to defuse the situation. Hercules wants to keep fighting. He's like, I shall smite him harder. Captain America's like, smiting Hercules, smiting doesn't do any good, dude. Like, he's the Beyonder. Let's just talk. And so finally somebody's like, let's just talk to the Beyonder. Finally, after it only took 4 issues. So yeah, they're trying to understand, like, why are you here? He's like, I want to understand your world. You know, I want to earn experience, gratitude. You know, I went to the galaxy and across the galaxy and helped you fight Nebula, but I made a mistake. You weren't happy with me. So I'm trying to figure out what I'm supposed to do. And then the Wasp drops the bombshell. How would you like to become an Avenger in training? And Hercules is freaking out. What? I cannot believe the mad offer I just heard. Captain America's like, calm down, dude. Think for a moment. What can we do? Right? Like, he really hasn't broken any laws. He's damaged some property, but, you know, the argument could be that people damage the property when by attacking him. You can't lock him up. He's got more, you know, he can snap his fingers and change reality. Like, and the Black Knight's, yeah, think of all the good he could do if we could kind of harness his power, right? So they seem to be agreed, and the Wasp is like, so what do you say? Are you interested? He says, I am interested, but uncertain. You are among the most interesting of beings I've encountered thus far, and there's a whole fascinating world out there I want to experience. I don't want to miss a thing. Apparently he's seen Armageddon. But then he says, still, perhaps there's something I can do before I go, and he restores their garage, restores all the Quinjets, all the fire damage is repaired. And he says, I hope that's helpful. And Wasp says, yes, we're extremely grateful. And he says, I am grateful for your gratitude. Until we meet again, Avengers. And he disappears again. And Hercules is like, well, he is well named because his power is far beyond that of the gods, as the gods are beyond the ant. What do we do now? And Captain Marvel's like, all we can do is try to keep tabs on him and make sure that he doesn't go over to the dark side, so to speak. Captain America's like, I hope that'll be enough, because if Beyonder's power gets corrupted, it could mean the end of everything. So, yeah, interesting that they finally stopped to talk, and somebody's finally making sense. Like, yeah, why wouldn't you be like, okay, come and be an Avenger and, you know, give him some attention and teach him? Because really, I mean, he could stop all crime, basically, just with a snap of his fingers if he really wanted to. So, an interesting issue. And like I said, it very much has the feel of the Avengers of this time period. So, anything else to add about 261, Nick?
Yeah, I would agree that when I was reading it, I'm like, that's the smartest move they've made, is to try to make him an Avenger so at least they can, like, dictate the direction he goes. But Captain America's foreshadowing, a large heaping pile of foreshadowing, suggests the book is going elsewhere. So,
yeah, that is for sure. All right, well, let's move on to the second of the 4 crossovers for this issue. It is Alpha Flight number 28, written by and penciled by John Byrne. We've got inks by Keith Williams and colors by Andy Yankus with letters by Rick Parker. So this is actually the final issue of John Byrne's run on Alpha Flight. I think he came back to it later. But, you know, he co-created those characters with Chris Claremont. They debuted in, I want to say, X-Men 120. Might have been a cameo, and then 121 was a first full appearance. And then, you know, because John Byrne is Canadian, and so you know, wanted to make these Canadian superheroes. And then he talks in the back of this, there's a splash page with a little editorial by him, and he talks about how, yeah, he thought that it would take about 6 issues to tell the Alpha Flight stories he wanted to tell, and then 6 issues turned into, like, 8? and then 12, and then 15, and then 18, and then 24, and then 28. And finally, after 28 issues, he feels like he finally told all the Avengers stories that he had to tell. So, pretty interesting.
Has the best title.
It is classic X-Men, or classic John Byrne looking 80s art and story. Yeah, and Nick's right. Like, it does have the perfect title. It's called Crossover: Gloom and Doom or Triumph and Joy. Alpha Fight fights on in Crossover. And the reason for that, it will become evident as I get into what happens in the story. But it also is interesting that he named it that, because it does cross over with Secret Wars 2. So as the issue opens up, we see members of Omega Flight running away from the Edmonton Mall. The West Edmonton Mall, I should say. And apparently they were fighting the members of Alpha Flight there, and they lost. They had the upper hand, but then the Beyonder showed up, and they lost. And so they're kind of upset. They're getting on Courtney, who is I'm not that familiar with Alpha Flight, so I'm not sure who exactly this is. He looks to me like the Guardian, who is the, you know, found James Hudson, the founder of Alpha Flight. But as they're running through the parking lot, all of a sudden one of the cars changes shapes, turns into a robot, and it looks like Jeffries is back, Madison Jeffries, who has the ability to kind of control all electronics. So you can imagine this Courtney guy who has stolen James Hudson's Guardian suit. The Guardian suit, all its powers are derived from the circuitry within the suit, and then he himself is an android. So it's pretty much the last person that he wants to see, right? This guy that can control, like, all electronics. So apparently he had a falling out with the other members of the Omega Flight, and now he's there to kind of get revenge, so to speak. So despite the fact that he seems like he's kind of friendly with the other members, Flashback and Wild Child and Diamond Lil, his dislike and his desire for revenge against Courtney kind of rules all here. So he manages to take out Diamond Lil, and then Wild Child. And then as the robot is going for Courtney, Courtney grabs one of Flashback. And Flashback can make duplicates of himself, and they're from possible futures, right? So he's pulling his own future self back in time. So as the robot's reaching for him, Courtney grabs one, puts it in front of the robot's hand, and the thing dies. Like, and Flashback freaks out. No, you've killed him. My future men are all me from some period yet to come. You've murdered my future. So he's freaking out. He's like, I could die in a few seconds, in a few minutes. Like, I don't know from how far in the future that self was, but once I reach that place, I'll cease to exist because I'm dead. So he's like totally flipping out. So meanwhile, with the rest of the members of Omega Flight subdued, Madison Jeffries basically walks over to Courtney. He's like, you're just another machine. Has him literally rip his face off of himself and then turns him inside out. Just like reaches inside his body and like vomits up all this circuitry and he's dead. So the rest of Omega Flight are kind of worried. They're like, what are you going to do? He's like, well, your accomplices to murder, you're going to have to take the fall. You know, I feel bad, but... And I don't think it's ever been like Madison Jeffries was a particularly good guy either, but he's not really a bad guy. He's more of a guy who's always kind of out for himself. At least that's my understanding, if I remember correctly. So he goes inside the mall to check on the rest of the members of Alpha Flight. The Beyonder is still there. He's holding Talisman in his arms. Talisman is the daughter of the Alpha Flight member Shaman. They both have magical-based powers. And we saw in the pages of Secret Wars number 4 how the Beyonder enlarged Shaman's magical pouch and was able to retrieve Talisman from inside it where she had been trapped. So the Beyonder says, all right, I got what I needed and I repaid you by basically rescuing your daughter and now I'm out of here. So, but he does mention before he leaves that there's great power within the frame of that woman, but it's her very humanity that's the barrier to that power. And Shaman does say, well, it's less her humanity than her youth, and the fullness of years will come the fullness of her power. So despite Northstar thinking that they should attack and it's an alien being and not trusting him, Puck and Heather Hudson are like, you know what? We're to blame. You know, we attacked him as soon as he showed up. We need to take a step back, take a deep breath, not have hair triggers. And, you know, he rescued Talisman. I think that kind of shows what his kind of intent is, right? He's not there to fight Alpha Flight for sure. So so the Beyonder puts Talisman down. He's like, last year recovered. It's time for me to depart. And depart he does. Back to the pages of Secret World 2, number 4, the love issue. So Talisman's pretty upset, and she actually punches her father. She's like, I can't believe that you left me in there. You promised you were going to save me. All you ever do is lie to me. And Shaman's pretty broken up about it. He's like, yeah, she's kind of right. Hold on a second. So Shaman's pretty broken up about it. He's like, yeah, she's kind of right, you know. I've broken promises to her again and again. You know, I've used her, I've manipulated her. My intentions have always been for the best. But, yeah, he's really, really out of sorts over this. And meanwhile, Talisman actually uses her power. She, you know, everyone's trying to calm her down from being so upset, from being stuck in the satchel for so long. And she's just like, why don't you all just go away? And she literally teleports them back to their base. So she is, you know, a lot more powerful than she first appears. So then Heather says, everybody needs to cool down, take 24 hours, relax, clean up. And just, you know, we've been through a lot recently. Just everybody needs to calm down. So as she goes and takes a bath and starts to get dressed, all the lights go out. She's like, oh, now what? So she heads to the laboratory where Roger Box is kind of their tech guy, and he's working with the kind of the box construct that he used to teleport his body into and control, which currently at this time is the host for Walter Langowski, I think is how you say his name, who used to be Sasquatch, right? So Sasquatch's body got destroyed when it got possessed by some other alien from another dimension or whatever. So Roger Box offered the Box robot for Langowski's like consciousness to inhabit. But meanwhile, they're looking for another body for him, and they're like, well, there's all these bodies. Maybe we can grab one from another dimension. I mean, it doesn't really seem like necessarily a good idea to me. Let's just search around different dimensions, find a humanoid body, and just stick his consciousness in it. Like, you have no idea what it's. And that's kind of Heather's point. She's like, wait, what are you doing? Why did nobody think to tell me about this? And where the heck is Shaman? If you didn't tell me about this, at least I thought you would have told him. And Roger Box is like, yeah, Dr. Tooman Young knows what we're doing. He's just feeling poorly and whatever. And he's like, I knew it. Shaman's the only one among us with any knowledge in this field, and he's too shaken up to be of help. So stop what you're doing. It's too dangerous. And Langowski in the robot body of Box is like, it's too late. We already hooked a target, and it's a big one. I'm ready to reel him in. But he's not cooperating. So what they decide to do is Langowski's going to teleport himself, his consciousness, down the fishing line, if you will, down the stream of Epsilon particles. And Roger Box teleports himself into the Box robot and takes over the holding of the fishing rod, so to speak, and keeps trying to reel it in. And Madison Jeffries is there helping out as well, and he kind of explains all this. And Heather's like, what is it they've hooked anyway? And Jeffries is like, well, it's a little vague. All we got is this outline, but it's big, it's humanoid, it's got almost no brainwaves, so it's perfect for what Lankowski needs.
What did they think it was based on that outline?
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm like, Hulk?
Exactly. It's so, I mean, even if it wasn't the Hulk, it like, again, you're like, why not go to the dimension, look around, you know, try to find something? You
can't. And again, I thought Hulk would have weak enough brainwaves that the transition would have worked. Like, I didn't know they would just reel him in and he'd be like, smash!
Yeah, and that's exactly what happens. So they reel him in and they're like, Mr. Lankowski? Walter? No, it's the Hulk! And yeah, he literally smashed. It looks like he breaks off one of Box's arms. So yeah, again, it wasn't a real good idea. But what's interesting is, so yeah, as I mentioned earlier, this is the last issue of John Byrne's run on Alpha Flight, and he stops in the middle of the story. But what happened to Walter Lankowski is, has Alpha Flight's plan failed for the soul-searing answers you must not miss? Secret Wars 2, number 4, and The Incredible Hulk 313. And then head back straight back to Alpha Flight for a bold new direction 29. So I think the second half of the story is actually in Incredible Hulk number 13, because Byrne does take over the Hulk after this. And he was on the Hulk for only a really short period of time, much shorter than he anticipated, because DC stole him away, basically. Because I loved
they'll what, do that.
I loved what Byrne appeared like he was going to do with the Hulk. But yeah, he was only on there for a few issues. But then DC recruited him to relaunch Superman. And I guess that was
too, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, that was too big of a carrot for him to resist. So
DC taking a great Marvel author.
Yeah, that being
said, like it happened recently for Superman.
Yeah, exactly. That being said, I think for the most part, the art is absolutely spectacular. I think the Beyonder looks a little bit weird. The one close-up we get of his face. I don't think that Byrne draws Michael Jackson hair particularly well. And that kind of, unfortunately, kind of ruins the aesthetic there. But otherwise, the storytelling, the rendering, the line work, the layouts within the panel, everything is spectacular. I mean, like, you can look at the art in this book and understand why John Byrne was such a, like, top art. He was probably the most popular artist during this period of comics. I mean, he was just, he could do anything he wanted. He could say, I want to write this, I want to write that, whatever. You know, I want to write and draw this, I want to write and draw that. And yeah, they would have given him whatever he wanted. He was that popular, and rightly so, I think. I mean, I think this stuff is spectacular. What are your thoughts? You have any thoughts on the art itself, Nick?
No, the art was great. That's fine. It's just, otherwise I had no connection to this book whatsoever, because I don't know who any of these characters are.
Yeah.
Like, I know what Alpha Flight is, but I've never met any of these characters, so it was hard to connect.
Yeah, and being that I'm such a Byrne fan, I have, like, a giant run of Alpha Flight from, like, issue 1 up to, like,
damn,
I don't know, 10-something. I think I'm missing a few. I don't think it's a complete run. I think I'm missing a few issues here or there in the 100s, but I've never read it. I've always planned to, but I've never gotten around to reading it. So, but yeah.
And like, the other thing about it is, like, I love when something's comic booky, but this is almost too comic booky. I'm like, what the hell's going on? Like, first there's this, and now they're transporting someone into the Hulk's body, and like, now that this guy usually lives in a robot, but right now he's in a wheelchair, and I'm like, what? So I love it. And I also want to see this in the movie. This should be its own side movie.
Alpha Flight movie?
No, just this part of the storyline that ties into the giant Secret Wars too. I'm envisioning Marvel.
Yeah, this really is. It really is two stories here. You've got the, well, really three, because you've got the whole Madison Jeffries against Omega Flight. Then you've got the Beyonder and Alpha Flight, and then you've got the Hulk thing. So it's really, it's almost like three acts in the same book. So it does read a little choppy, I will say, you know, for that reason. But I doubt John Byrne was very happy that this one got shoehorned in there. And it's so funny, it's right, like, why do you tie into stuff so you can give people an idea? Oh, I'll go and read this issue of Alpha Flight. Oh, I've never read Alpha Flight before, but I read it because it tied into Secret Wars 2, and it's great. I can't wait to read more Alpha Flight, except the next issue, issue 29, is a bold new direction, and it's not going to be anything like this issue that was written and drawn by John Byrne. So, okay, like, why didn't they just wait an issue and have Secret Wars 2 miniseries tie into 29? Unless they were trying to trick people into thinking it was, you know, oh yeah, I liked Alpha Flight, it's going to be great. But then you read issue 29 and it's not by Byrne. He says I'm gone, basically. I'm done after 28 issues. But I don't know, maybe still get people to pick up 29. I don't know. It just seems strange to me.
It was probably just the timing of it, because he was so excited to leave for DC.
Yeah, that's possible too. It might have been planned to be crossed over before. Well, no, because he wasn't leaving Alpha Flight for DC. He was leaving Alpha Flight to go on Hulk.
Oh. No, that is weird timing then.
Yeah, so. All right, well, let's talk about the next book. Sorry, my daughter's iPad has an alarm that goes off every day.
I didn't even hear it. Which book's next?
And it's so annoying. I've tried to find where the alarm's coming from, and I can never find how to turn it off.
Rom?
We'll do Dazzler.
Dazzler?
All right, let's talk about the next book, Dazzler number 40. I'm going to sum it up in one word. This book was weird. Like, weird. Written by Archie Goodwin, inks by Paul Chadwick, or sorry, pencils by Paul Chadwick, inks by Jackson Geis, letters by Jim Novak, colors by Petra Scotese. Yeah, it was weird. It starts off with three, I guess, mod-looking bikers traveling along the
Frank Miller-esque, like the mutants,
and like slow mutants or something. I don't know the name of it's Travelers. We also see that there's some guy named Dust who apparently can transfer bodies and has just stolen the body of a truck driver while his previous host sits in the passenger seat desiccated, has turned to dust, in fact. And then we catch up with the bounty hunter that we first saw in Secret Wars 2, number 4, that had captured Allison Blair. His truck is broken down. His dog is there. So he leaves his truck. He walks to the nearest town. Meanwhile, the Beyonder and Allison Blair, Dazzler, are at a mall. And this is what I didn't get. This is so confusing to me. She's like, I thought we were going back to where you found me. I read about this new mall opening, but I never expected to see it from this perspective. I'm like, where exactly does this tie in?
Isn't that after?
After she falls and hits the ground, and he brings her back to life, I guess?
Well, it's right. Yeah, it's right at the end of the last one, before he returns her, I guess.
Yeah,
or it must be shoved in there.
Well, see, because this is what I didn't get, right? He's like, before we part, I wanted to hear you sing again. I know you miss performing. The acoustics in this place will be a perfect spot. We've done well, averted a potentially great disaster. That's what I didn't understand. Like, what great disaster? Was it the disaster of her, like, dying when she gave him all the power back of the Beyonder? And so this is before, because when he resurrected her, he resurrected her in such a way that she was, like, all in love with him and everything, and then it took him about, like, a minute maybe to be like, no, you're not you. You're not the person that I supposedly fell in love with when I'm controlling your thoughts. So then he releases her and then says he's going to make her forget. But, yeah, I guess that potentially great disaster really threw me off. I'm like, what? Did I miss something or whatever? So, anyway, Dazzler says, I'm really not ready to start performing again. I really want to concentrate on working on kind of stopping this level of mutant hatred and mutant persecution that's going on. And then at some point, maybe I'll get back to my singing career, but I've got to do it on my own. I can't let other people help me do it, because then it doesn't mean as much, I suppose. So she's like, nah, I really need to do it on my own. So Piotr's like, okay, I'll take you back, because that's exactly what he had agreed to do. Take her back to exactly the place she was when he first snatched her up. So that's with the bounty hunter. So takes her back. The truck's broken down. And it turns out the bounty hunter, OZ, has, as I said, walked to the nearest town. He asks about getting a tow, but unfortunately the garage only has two tow trucks and they're both out on calls, so he heads to the local bar to get some refreshment while he's waiting. And while he's there, these weird bikers show up. And they're like, they're looking for Dazzler. Where's Dazzler? One of them apparently can smell it on this bounty hunter that he's been around Dazzler. So it starts a fight. And the powers of these bikers aren't easily explained. And it seems like they keep getting like more and more abilities as time goes on. And we do see the dog get to drink some beer. So that's cool. So as they throw the bounty hunter through the plate glass front window, Dazzler, and they're kind of beating on him outside, Dazzler shows up. She blasts him with some of her light powers, and she asks OZ Chase, hey, are you okay? He's like, yeah, nothing but shock and trauma. And he's like, how'd you start my pickup? She's like, well, I've got another traveler, and he's got a knack for dealing with those kind of things. So they're trying to figure out what exactly is going on. And while they're doing that, the bikers kind of regain consciousness. They start firing at them again. And again, they seem to be getting more powerful as time goes on. And it seems like the bounty hunter and Dazzler might even lose the battle. But luckily, who shows up? Of course, the Beyonder. He had been inside Dazzler all along to observe and share her experiences.
Creepy.
Yeah, really creepy. She doesn't really seem to have that big of a problem with it. But they keep fighting, and the Beyonder gives himself a superhero costume, and every time they think they've defeated the bikers come back stronger and more powerful no matter what they do. They blow up a gas station, and every new event that happens, every new time they like level up, the Beyonder and Allison work together and they manage to stop them, but yet they level up and they come back. And at one point, they like form into this giant juggernaut-looking biker thing.
And I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, like something out of like Mega City Judge Dredd kind of looking thing that all three of them have basically merged into this hybrid punk motorcycle like Devo mod looking visor wearing spike motorcycle creature. And the Beyonder's like, look out, Allison. And the Beyonder has agreed to like limit his power. He's like, I want to experience life the way you experience it, right? So he's using powers like he has powers of a superhero, but he's using them at like about the same level as Allison Blair Dazzler. He could snap his fingers and make these biker people disappear, right? And he's like, they can't properly angle their power blast while swerving. Before they can adjust, go for their faces, Allison. While they're blinded, I can't. She's like, nah, I've developed my own strategy. I'm walking away. And he's like, what are you doing? Like, you're making yourself an easy target. If we don't keep resisting, there's... She said, no satisfaction. She's realized what's going on. So basically, the Beyonder was the one leveling them up. He's like, you're right. I was the source of their increasing power, raising it to greater and greater levels. But I didn't act out of malevolence. When we started battling side by side, we were so effective. The satisfaction increased unconsciously, and you worked to maintain it. You bolstered my abilities, and we were quite a team. But you've got to recognize satisfaction. There are better ways to experience it. Meanwhile, the townsfolk, now that the fight is over, kind of come out of the woodwork and they're pretty mad. Again, it's all the anti-mutant sentiment. They're like, we're taking back our town. We got folks with guns. We're tired of you terrorizing us. And Allison's like, wait, we weren't, there was a threat. We were stopping the threat. Like, and they're like, nope, we ain't in the mood to listen. It's all your fault. So then the bounty hunter shows up, fires his shotgun in the air, and is like, look, if you're not going to listen to a mutant, listen to me. I'm the only human here to have actually had some lumps laid on his hide, and I've taken worse. And if Dazzler hadn't stepped in, the other three would have really kicked off a war. So prove you're just don't prove you're just like what you claim to hate. You got to go over me along with her and her friend. He's like, easy for you to say, self-righteous bounty hunter. Your livelihood didn't get trashed. And from one panel to the next, it's like, oh, look, gas station fixed. 18-wheeler truck fixed. Diner plate window fixed. Yeah, wasn't there a bad fire? I don't see any damage. Don't see a broken window. And Allison Blair Dazzler says, well, I guess you stopped limiting your powers. He's like, well, most of this will fade from their minds. Mr. Chase as well. If I learned anything, it's that if anyone learned from his words, that will linger because, well, it seems more satisfying. So he pretty much erased everything from the townsfolk's minds other than the fact that Chase was telling them they need to appreciate the fact that the mutants are out there risking their lives for, you know, regular people without powers, and they should not want to become what they hate and instead appreciate them. So it's a nice sentiment. Doesn't work, but it's a nice sentiment. So the Beyonder finally does take his leave of Dazzler, but it's not the last interaction the two have. So again, for me, this issue was just really strange. The art in it isn't... I feel about this art the way you feel about most art, Nick, where you're like, yeah, I didn't really notice it. It wasn't bad art. It wasn't good art. It was just kind of meh. But yeah, it was just weird. I thought the villains were super weird. You know, the motorcycle guys were weird. I thought, you know, the confusion and the wording of, you know, averted a potential great disaster. I was like, wait, what is it? It is a pretty big disaster if Dazzler dies. I don't know. This was just weird. It was far and away my least favorite of the four crossovers. And it didn't really seem to serve a purpose. I mean, the Beyonder needed to learn about satisfaction, apparently.
I liked the upping of the game fact that he was doing that. Like, I like this better than Alpha Flight, because like I said, I was lost in that, not knowing characters. But I don't know. I noticed something as we were going through this that has changed for current event comics. So obviously, like a current event comic, like let's say the books I was getting during Secret Empire that I kept getting were Cap, Amazing Spider-Man, and Avengers, and they all tied in. They would all draw on previous issues of those comics, but they wouldn't really break in the middle. Like, some of these barely involved the Beyonder. These days, if an event comic is tied into Secret Empire, it's 100% about Secret Empire. Yeah. It's not like some of these comics, like we've discussed, are Beyonders like in there for like five pages or even five panels.
Yeah, but like the one we just talked about, Alpha Flight, there's much more of that issue dedicated to the Madison Jeffries stuff and the hooking the Hulk with their cosmic fishing rod than there is the Beyonder stuff.
So, like, they overdo the crossovers these days as far as the amount of issues you should have to buy if you were to buy everything. But at the same time, I think they're worth more in a way because they more serve the story and you have to know less about. You're not in the middle of another book storyline while you're joining a Beyonder storyline.
Yeah. Yeah, I would tend to agree with that 100%. So
I hadn't noticed that until now, so.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, maybe this issue just exists to teach Beyonder about satisfaction.
I just like the idea that that's what he thinks is satisfaction. It's like, oh, we beat them. Let's try again, only harder, and I'll boost your powers more. And that's how little he understands about, like, earning something.
Well, if they wanted to teach him about satisfaction, they probably just could have played him the Rolling Stones song. And then he would have just understood. You can't get no. satisfaction. Yeah.
No one's been around to guide him through music yet.
Yeah,
he hasn't like run into a hippie in San Francisco or something.
All right, well, let's move on to the last issue for the episode. It's ROM, Space Knight, 72. ROM ended with 75, so this is very much toward the end of the run. And ROM doesn't even appear in the issue. It's Rick Jones, Brandy Clark, and Cindy Adams, who have all been touched in a way by the recent Wraith War on Earth. And the Beyonder looking very un-Beyonder-like. But maybe the coolest thing about this issue, drawn by the legendary Steve Ditko, who just passed away a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Is that why they chose to not even bother to look at what he looked like before and just do their own thing?
Yeah, that's Ditko. He's going to do what he wants. Yeah,
that's awesome. Because I was like, why did this book just not, the artist of this book just not read the other books? No, it's Ditko. He can redesign.
Don't you know who I am? I'm Steve Ditko. I can do what I want.
Absolutely.
So it's written by Bill Mantlo, who wrote the entire ROM storyline. We've got Steve Ditko and Bob Layton on art. We've got Petra Scotese on colors and Janice Chang on letters. So, When You Wish Upon a Star. And this ties into Secret Wars 4 definitely. In the beginning of that book, if you remember when the Beyonder was in his flying Lamborghini Countach and was talking about he scanned all the desires of everybody in the world, kind of like Bruce Almighty with the emails, there were several people whose desires stood out as being different and not kind of the same old thing. And three of those people were mentioned, and it's Brandy Clark, Rick Jones, and Cindy Adams. So the Beyonder decides to go and give them a closer look. So he's walking through the sky. He doesn't look anything like the previous Beyonder. He looks like he's kind of made out of stars or something. Lightning.
He looks more like Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah, a little bit. And apparently he's in his elemental form. And he's talking about incompleteness. Again, a little bit of satisfaction. But more still exploring this idea of desire, right? The thing that's been his driving factor in coming to Earth in the first place. Why can't I experience the longing felt by every human, the thing called desire? It's like, perhaps I've given my human self, my human embodiment, or it says previously I've given myself human embodiment, and as a result learned that desire is tangible to that simple form. But even now in my elemental form, I can grasp hold of the electrical force that so fascinates humankind. He grabs like a bolt of lightning and he's like, I can manipulate it. I can do what I want with it. Tosses it up in the sky. It turns into fireworks. He's like, I can do all these things. Why can't I grasp desire? It's still a mystery to me, but you know, there are these three people who have these desires that seem a little different, a little off the beaten path. And maybe I can grant them their desires and see what happens. Will they be satisfied? Will they be happy? Let's see what happens, right? So meanwhile, inside the cabin, Cindy and Rick and Brandy are having a little supper. There's a big storm outside, and they're all, you know, thinking about the ways the Wraith War has changed them. Previously, Brandy Clark was the first person to encounter ROM Space Knight. She eventually became a Space Knight herself, and then she had that power taken away from her. But she loves ROM, and all she wants to do is be with him, and she feels like in order to do that, she needs to be a Space Knight. Meanwhile, Rick Jones, who had been a sidekick for Captain Marvel and Captain America and the Hulk, he's actually dying of an incurable gamma cancer because when hanging around with the Hulk, he irradiated himself with gamma radiation to try to turn himself into Hulk to go rescue the Bruce Banner Hulk. So he's dealing with that. And meanwhile, Cindy Adams has a Wraith stuck in her mind because the Wraiths used to have this stinger that would shoot out of their mouth, and it would basically go into the brain of whoever their victim was and absorb their memories and their identity, and then the Wraith would shape change and look like that person, and the other person would die. But when the stinger was in Cindy's brain before the Wraith could kind of like suck out her memories, the stinger got severed, and the Wraith got killed. So now the Wraith is like stuck in her mind. So she's living with this terrible alien presence in her mind. So that's kind of where those three characters are when the story starts.
That is messed up.
Yeah, Rom is a really good story. I mean, I know it's based on a toy or whatever, but Matla did an incredible job of making it very compelling. So, like a bolt from the blue, here comes the Beyonder. So, Cindy's actually singing a song about when you wish upon a star, and all of a sudden there's a big flash of brilliance. So bright, it makes the inside of the cabin look dark in comparison. And Rick's like, maybe that was a bolt of lightning that struck nearby. Let me go check. And sure enough, he sees a tree that's like basically been cut in half by the lightning with the man lying underneath it. And it looks like Steve Rogers, actually. So it's again, the Beyonder in that early form. There's no Michael Jackson hair going on here, and just regular clothes. So they bring him inside, and he drinks coffee. He talks with them. He claims to be a hiker who got lost in the storm. But Cindy notices Rick was only out there for a minute, and he's soaking wet. This guy is out there for a long time, at least a few minutes, and he's dry as a bone. Like, what's going on? So she's suspicious right away. But they feed him. They make him feel better. And then while they're having dinner, the thoughts of these three are still on, you know, their particular problems. You know, Rick with his cancer, Brandy wanting to be a space knight, Cindy Adams not only wanting the Wraith out of her brain, but wanting her parents back, her parents who were killed by that very same Wraith. So as Rick is overcome with a bit of a coughing fit because of his cancer, the Beyonder had turned the conversation to what wishes they might have, what desires they might have to be granted. And he asked Cindy Adams, what would you wish for, little one? He said, nothing you could give me. I don't know where you really come from, but the Wraith that died in my mind lets me see things, and you're not who you pretend to be. And here we go. He transforms into the Beyonder that we have come to know. And I was right. Steve Ditko does not draw the Michael Jackson hair very well. It looks...
But thank God we're back to Michael Jackson hair Beyonder, regardless.
It looks terrible. He's like, I've come to help you and grant your wishes, for I am the genie from beyond, and no wishing for more wishes. And so he shines his light on them, and boom, no more Wraith in Cindy's head. Rick says, cancer's gone, I could feel it. And Brandy Clark has been turned back into a space knight. She's once again Starshine. And they're like, you're not of Earth, are you? And Cindy's like, are you God? And so then he kind of explains to them, I'm the Beyonder. I came to you. You didn't really know me, and you greeted me with kindness and generosity, unlike others of your kind. And for that reason, I deemed to reward you with your heart's desire. And yeah, they're all real happy. Rick's like, I'm going to live. Cindy's like, my waking nightmares are over. And Brandy's like, I can soar into space to join Rom. And the Beyonder's like, so they're happy. Complete contentment then. This is the result of desire fulfillment. And they're like, wait, what? You make it sound like what you did to us was an experiment. He's like, well, it was in a manner of speaking. Where I come, there is no incompleteness. None of what humans call desire. So I've decided to experience desire for myself, and now I feel incomplete. But I wanted to determine whether completeness could be regained. And Rick's like, so now having given us what we wish for, we're supposed to be complete? Well, I don't know. He's like, perhaps I should be content, but I can't help feeling I was selfish to just wish for a cure for myself. There must be millions of people afflicted with cancer. He could have wished for all cancer to be cured. And Cindy's like, yeah, and I got my wish, but if I had thought about it, I would have wished for my mom and dad to be alive before. I could have lived with the Wraith inside me then. And Brandy's like, yeah, and I might have wished that you had restored Rom's humanity so we both could be human together rather than turning me back into a space knight. So right away, they got what they thought they wanted, and right away they want more, right? I mean, it's human nature to never be satisfied. And so that's what the desires, that's what the Beyonder is coming to learn, right? He's like, I don't understand. Granting desire only leads to greater desire. or guilt that your desires were fulfilled and others weren't. He's like, I can grant all your wishes if you want. And Brandy's like, prove it. Stop the storm. He's like, okay. Storm stopped. They walk outside. And Rick's like, he did it. But maybe the storm was going to end anyway. And the Beyonder's like, you need further proof? Sure. How about you lift that mountain? As you wish. Lifts the mountain. All these animals start falling off the mountain. Oh, no, wait, stop. We don't want all the wildlife on the mountain to die. And the Beyonder, save them. And he's like, why don't you save them, Rick Jones? I know you have desire to be a hero yourself. And transforms him. And of course he's green, wearing purple. Transforms him into a hero. And he flies over and he catches all the animals. Deposits them safely on the ground. Says, what a rush. For years, all this time associated as a sidekick. Now when I know what it means to be a real hero. Fortunately, he missed one, the biggest one. There's a deer that fell and broke its neck. And Rick starts feeling guilty immediately. Oh, no. I missed one. And the Beyonder's like, don't worry. Save so many others, and this one's easily repaired. But Rick's like, that's not the point. I asked you to raise the mountain. If the deer got hurt or somebody else had gotten hurt, if they died, or a human being, it would have been my responsibility. You know, and I doubt that death is even something that you, coming from beyond, can repair. And Brandy's like, yeah, I'm starting to understand there are consequences every time you wish for something. What if I wish for Rom to be human and you did that while he's soaring through space and he's dead? What if we wish to end all disease and hunger, overpopulation? That could lead to war. That could lead to the end of the human race. Like, right. So they're starting to realize that, yeah, you can't just wish with impunity. You can't just change reality with impunity and not have consequences. But Cindy's, she doesn't see it that way. She's young. She's a kid, right? She's like, I really do want my parents back. Like, I don't see any bad consequences for that. And the Beyonder's like, well, Rick's right. If they're dead, I would not be able to raise them from the dead. But they're not actually dead. And this comes as a surprise to everybody. They're actually in limbo. So, again, the Wraith had absorbed the mind, memory, and apparently also like the life force of both of Cindy's parents. And then when it was using its stinger to try to do the same thing to Cindy, it got banished to limbo by Rom. Rom didn't kill. He would banish these Wraiths to the limbo dimension. And apparently the Wraith that killed her parents is in limbo and still in possession of the life force of her two parents. So the Beyonder sends Brandy Clark and Rick Jones there, and Brandy's looking around, and with her light eyes, she can see what life forces, what people each Wraith has stolen life from, right? It's pretty horrific. I mean, she's like, oh my God, I could be here forever. There are so many. You know, my parents are here. My fiance's here. And Rick's like, it's madness. It's more than we can deal with. Just find her parents and go. We've got to just find her parents and get out, forsaking all others. We can't rescue everybody. Not to mention the fact that they don't have bodies anyway, right? So after a few minutes, they do find Brandy's parents. They're both possessed by one Wraith. So Rick grabs it and he's like, now what? We're ready to, oh wait, Beyonder, we're ready. And then boom, they're back on Earth. So the Beyonder literally reaches into the Wraith and pulls out two like glowing spheres that are the life forces of Cindy's parents. And meanwhile, the Wraith disappears back to limbo. And the Beyonder says, well, here's their stolen life forces. They were once your mother and father. They can be again if you wish it. She's like, I do. Oh, yes, I do. I do. And Rick's like, Cindy, are you sure? And Brandy's like, she's as sure as a child can be. For her, there are no consequences, only the promise of happiness, right? And so sure enough, her parents are restored by the Beyonder. And they're all crying tears of joy. They're so happy. And Rick comments, she got everything she wanted with no consequences. Brandy said, other than perfect happiness. And the Beyonder says, yeah, the child radiates complete contentment, but that will change. And Brandy's like, what do you mean? Will something happen to her? And the Beyonder's like, yeah, she's going to, what you humans call, grow up over time. She'll be overtaken, and it'll have new desires. She'll have new desires. And Rick Jones is like, well, that's okay. The Beyonder's like, what? I don't understand. And Rick's like, that's life, dude. That's life you're talking about. And Brandy's like, yeah, for now, Cindy as a child is content because her parents are back. And the Beyonder says, yeah, but she'll grow up, go through changes, become an adult, start having other desires, more than she'll desire more than she can ever have. And Rick Jones is like, someone once said a man's reach should exceed his grasp. Or what's a heaven for? And the Beyonder, of course, knows this. Oh, yeah, that was your poet Browning. He's like, oh, you know that too? Yes, though I'm from, yeah, you're from beyond. We got it. You're from beyond, but you don't understand. He's like, what it means is that it's okay to be perfectly happy when you're a child because you're wide-eyed, you're innocent, and you can only see the good, and you quickly get over the bad. But to be a hero is to have responsibility, and I'm not sure that I'm ready to have that. So I'm not happy. Change me back. He goes, okay, I put you back, cancer and all. Like, wait, no. Maybe, you know, give me back my human form, but you don't necessarily have to give me back the cancer, right? It's okay to let me live. I just don't want the responsibility of superpowers, which is interesting because later on Rick Jones gets superpowers. So he does grant him that wish, and Brandy Clark the same. She does not want to retain her Starshine powers. She wants to be herself, but she wants to be beside Rom. So the Beyonder sends her out to be beside Rom, wherever that is out in the galaxy. Rick Jones is restored. Cindy Adams is happy with her parents. And the Beyonder walks off saying, I merely seek completeness and I try to understand. And Rick Jones is like, that's a tall order, fella. Good luck and adios. So it's interesting that Rick tries to explain to him, yeah, you know, your reach should exceed your grasp. It's human nature. But you can never fully understand. You can never totally be satisfied unless you're, you know, a kid. And even then, it's going to change over time. So that's kind of the Beyonder's issue, right? And I don't know that it can be one that can be resolved, right? Because the Beyonder says, I was never young. He didn't even know what time was, right? So he can have anything he wants. There's no limitations on him. But he's, you know, Rick Jones straight out asks him, are you happy? Well, I was, but now I'm incomplete. He's incomplete because he now understands what desire is, but he doesn't know any way to satisfy desire. Because I would make the argument that there is no way to satisfy desire. That's what makes it desire, right? No matter what you wish for over time, you're eventually going to want something else.
He's on a fool's errand.
Yeah, right. I mean, think if you had absolute power and you could have anything you wanted, like there would always be something more. Like I don't even know that we can comprehend that as a concept to be like completely satisfied. You can be happy at certain times and completely content at certain times, but there's always going to be.
Well, yeah, because if you're happy all the time, it would just be boring. Like, you need the lows to understand the highs.
Well, yeah, and you need something to strive for, right? Like, if you had the power of the Beyonder and you could have anything, do anything, go anywhere, it's like, well, then what's the point?
I would be fine with that.
Well, I'd take it for a while, don't get me wrong, but I mean, isn't there's a lot to be said for the, like, life's about the journey, right? It's how you get there. It's overcoming and learning and experiencing and growing. And if you know everything and have everything, then what's the point?
Well, look, I would just make unlimited money, so I went to work and I'd lay on the couch, and like, and if I needed more time in a day, I'd add more hours to the day so I could get through all the movies, comic books, and all that stuff I want.
But you'd know all that. You'd be you're omnipotent. You have the power of the Beyonder. It's like, you know, like when Rick Jones quotes Browning, and he's like, oh yeah, you're poet Browning. You would already have seen every movie. You would already have read every comic. You would already have the knowledge of having. You've already have the experience of watching it all and doing it.
I would hope to God the Avengers exist in this reality where that I have ultimate power, because otherwise I would be bored, and I'd mess with them just like he's doing, only more intentional.
And you'd hire Kevin Smith to tell your life story.
Yeah. No, I would force him to do it. See, that's the power of the Beyonder that you're missing here. I get whatever I want.
I do what I want. Turns out
I wouldn't even care about free will unless it was like a relationship. That's different.
Turns out the Beyonder's just Cartman. I do what I want. You don't own me.
I would take that twist and be like, yes, Secret Wars 2 is the greatest event in the history of comic books.
What'd you think of the Steve Ditko art? It's a little different, right? A little quirky?
Yeah, I like that he finally get. I don't know. I just think it's weird that... I mean, I know it's because Ditko wanted to do it, but it's so weird to just be like, forget what you know about the Beyonder for every other issue you've ever seen him in. This isn't even his, like... white omnipotent form. This is his, like, now he's like a star man.
Yeah, well, he does change it back to the Michael Jackson hair. I'd rather he would have been Starman. I preferred that over the Michael Jackson hair. It looked terrible.
Even then, like, I don't think in anyone else's book we would have seen Captain America looking in between. Like, that was kind of weird that he wanted to draw that too.
Yeah. Yeah, his, I mean, his, what I was not a fan of Ditko back in the day. I take that back. I didn't like Ditko's art on ROM when he came on ROM, because Buscema had done he did almost the whole run. He did like 65 issues or 64 issues or something. And then Ditko came in and took over for the last few. And I was like, why are they bringing this guy on? I don't feel like it suits like a kind of a science fiction based comic. He's great on Spider-Man, great on Creeper, great on, Doctor Strange, because it's kind of quirky and spooky and magical, whatever, and it could work like that. But I don't know, his sense of movement, I feel, didn't work for Ron that well. But that being said, like over time, as I've gone back and read those issues, I've come to appreciate it more, just because it is I can just appreciate it, the fact that it's Ditko art, and he was a great storyteller and had a great sense of like transitioning from panel to panel. So I don't mind it at all. So. All right, anything else you want to say about any of these crossovers?
No, except for, like, still, this is, like, why I like Secret Wars 2 more than Secret Wars. This is getting weird.
Yes.
I'll take it.
It is weird for sure. So thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help us with visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, be sure to check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Quick reminder that as you're listening to this Secret Wars Saturday, I am at San Diego Comic-Con. If you're there, or if you're going to be there tomorrow or be there later today, definitely let me know. Hit me up on social media. Love to meet up with you, hook you up with a free Comic Source lanyard, and take a picture and find out what you like about the show, maybe even what you don't like, where we can improve. We always love to hear from listeners. So once again, we want to thank everyone for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.